come at me, bro.
Already here, bro.
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 Therapy Fans Podcast, where we discuss all things movies past, present, and occasionally future. My name is still Sammy Chester.
And I'm still John Gilpatrick, and we are still talking about the movies of December 2022. One in particular, a big whale of a movie that we missed from our previous December 2022 episode, and I'm not talking Brendan Fraser.
That is also a very large whale. What are your like top 3 to 5 or whatever left to watch movies to close out the year? I can give you mine. Oh. One of them is The Whale, as you mentioned, and then besides The Whale, I'm still wanting to get to the acclaimed documentary All the Beauty and the Bloodshed. Babylon is still on my list. And then Great Freedom. Great Freedom is a movie I actually started watching and I hope to finish soon. It's a German movie. So those are my big four that I'm going to hope to see in the next week. And then I'll be, you know, kind of tie a knot on 2022. How about you?
Could separate out movies I'm especially interested in seeing versus ones that I feel compelled at that, like for a variety of reasons, maybe I should see. And I would say Babylon is more in the latter, where I should see that, even though I'm kind of borderline indifferent towards it. And maybe The Whale is in a similar boat. And then I totally agree with you. All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, something I'm excited to watch and just haven't had the opportunity to yet. Decision to Leave is another one that just like I wasn't able to catch up with it. I think I will be able to before our bracket next month, which, spoiler, I believe that title is going to crack the top 32. Those are ones for sure for me that have my interest peaked.
Excited about Babylon because I haven't really looked at reviews very much. I know it hasn't gotten a ton of love, but it has a lot of fun stars and it, you know, it has probably a lot of noise and distraction. So there's enough there that I am excited to see it, though, you know, I'm going in with pretty modest expectations. Curious your most disappointing movies of the past year. So I'll give you my two, neither of which I think deserves to be in the bracket and I don't think is going to be. One of them is After Yang. After Yang is one of my three worst movies of the year. I'd liked Columbus, the director's previous. I liked Colin Farrell. I thought the movie was really fun at times with Colin Farrell wearing those little glasses, but complete miss for me. And then the other one was Broker. Japanese director, but a movie in Korean. I again wanted to like it. The lead of the movie was the lead, of course, from Parasite. It touches on themes that are sort of close to home for, you know, me. It was very, very soapy and just not just a very good movie when you kind of strip away the names and the sort of themes. So Broker and After Yang were my two disappointing. I don't know about you.
So I tended to avoid most of the movies that they seemed like they'd be disappointments for me. And it's part of the reason why I mentioned earlier why like I am supposed to watch Babylon and The Whale. And I'm do I really need to / want to? White Noise, which I can't remember if I talked about on the last episode or not,
but
it was just a bummer for somebody. I dig Noah Baumbach for the most part, and I really couldn't get into this movie. And there's another one that came out much earlier in the year, which I believe I did talk about on air, which is called Not Okay, directed by Quinn Shepherd, and just like looked like a kind of a movie that was playing off of like the social media age, and I just didn't find like its message to be particularly penetrating in any sort of unique way. It was, felt very like redundant and sort of entertaining or incisive, and I think it thought it was both, so that kind of bummed me out.
Really happy to hear that you managed to miss most of them, because I don't think I converted you, but I'm always happy to hear that another movie fan is part of the I try to avoid movies I don't think I'll like group.
One that I would put in that list is, like, for sure is Blonde, which like I was very excited about for most of the year, and then kind of the reviews started to trickle out. I was just like increasingly sort of dreading watching it, and I did end up watching about like 5 minutes of it, and I was just like, no, I'm not going to waste my time with this. This just looks like it's miserable.
But we gather here to celebrate, not to bury. We both want to celebrate a bit of Avatar 2, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, The Way of Water, let's take it.
I thought it was way too long. I thought the main character was a complete blank to me. But that's
so who do you think the main character was?
In the first movie, I felt that we had to really connect with Jake Sully, who was the main character. And I felt that this movie doesn't ask me to really care or even remember who Jake Sully was. I would say some combination of Spider and the bad guy are more prominent, the quote-unquote main characters, or the second son.
Yeah, I think I agree with that.
And don't ask me to remember any of the names. I couldn't tell the difference between the Sully children until a whale showed up. that I really understood the difference between the two older boys of the Sullys. You know, they're all blue. So
yeah, they are blue. The one daughter was Sigourney Weaver and the other one was like a child. So that was easy enough.
Are you someone, when someone says, what do you think about Avatar? Do you think about the Last Airbender or do you think about a bunch of blue people?
Absolutely no relationship to Avatar, the Last Airbender. I was like a fan of the original Avatar. One of the first Blu-rays I bought because it came out in 2010. I got my first HD TV around that time and a Blu-ray player with it. And I watched it. It was just kind of like, yeah, it just does not hit the same at home as it does in the theaters. 2D versus 3D. The only reason you really think much of Avatar is because you're reminded every year or two that the new Avatar movie is not coming out because James Cameron's postponed it again.
Like most of the filming was done like 8 years
ago? My understanding is that most of the filming was done, I want to say like 2019-ish, and it was going into 2020. And then there was issues, obviously, with the COVID shutdown. And maybe it started before 2019, a concern with the kid who played Spider being the only sort of human character. And he, as a teenage, adolescent, you know, young boy,
was changing on screen. He couldn't
that
come
they
back
were maybe going to need to recast that character as a whole new actor and reshoot all of his material because they couldn't film anymore with the pandemic. And that, you know, they were able to make all that work out. And I don't know how much of that time after the first one, he was like, I'm going to go deep sea diving for 4 years. I'll see you later. Supposed to come out in 2012. We finally got it exactly 10 years later.
There was a really good conversation, which I'll put in the show notes, between Villeneuve, the director of Dune, of course, and other movies, and between James Cameron. I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name right, of course.
Just Cameron.
Cameron. Yeah, that makes more sense. He says, you know, how do you go about getting your actors in the mood? You know, because he took his guys off to the desert and in the Jordan, you know, and like really made them feel the desert of Arrakis. And how did you make them feel the waters of Pandora? Cameron's like, oh, I took them on sort of like a sensory expedition. Before we filmed the movie, we went to Maui, Hawaii, and we sort of tramped through the jungle for a few days, to the beach for a few days, and we went scuba diving. And I told the actors, I said, you have to sort of remember what this experience is like, because we're going to go back to a green soundstage in California or wherever. You're going to have to sort of remember what it's like to walk through the jungle underwater or whatnot. I mean, they did film some of it underwater, not the Hawaii setting of the movie underwater. I'm actually most excited to speak to you more about the plot and the story and the characters. I wasn't so taken with the visuals, and that's because I found them at their best, a National Geographic documentary.
That's funny.
I don't really love nature documentaries. I find them nice, but like I'm not like motivated to go watch them. This is sort of a special effects version of a documentary about the ocean. I wish that part would have been 10 to 15 minutes. Effectively, they have to, in those 15 minutes, show you that they're now good at swimming and show you the tension between, as you mentioned, the second son.
Complete opposite thing was sort of my experience with it, where I found that stuff to be like by far the most compelling segments and sections of the movie, because I don't think the plot was like particularly interesting. I left the movie thinking about it and saying like, you know, like I sort of wish that like instead of doing like three more sequels where we like follow these characters and meet new ones, I'd just as soon have him do like a six-part Planet Pandora documentary series about just the different environments in this world and just kind of do that instead, because that just like is much more interesting to me than like any plot he's come up with now for two movies or presumably
so almost
for three more.
Taking that one kind of geeky doctor who apparently was a character 10 years ago and he pops up for like a few seconds in this one, and maybe just have him go on some sort of scientific exploration of the island. Maybe him, and I don't know if he survives, but you know, there's that there's this sort of geeky marine biologist in this movie who sort of seems to have second thoughts about what the bad guys, so to speak, are doing. So maybe have the doctor and the marine biologist just get on a little you know, mini airship and fly around the island, introducing the audiences to the different flora and fauna of Pandora.
That's fine. You're saying, yeah, I don't even need people or blue, like
I don't need any blue people. The blue
just,
people
just like
do
a totally.
Do you like those underwater documentaries about nature? Do you really go?
I
for
do.
Those?
I like You're that like, stuff. Oh. Yeah, I enjoy that stuff.
We're talking about volcanoes because there's a few volcano documentaries the last few years, including this year. And I mentioned to you that, you know, I like watching volcanoes go off once or twice in a movie, but I don't have to. I'm not so excited to watch them go off for like an hour and a half of movie time. So with your permission, then I'd happy to sort of dive a bit into the plot for what it is. The most interesting plot point, and effectively, I guess, the most interesting character by far, for me, it's Spider. It also helps that he, you know, isn't a blue person, so I could tell who he was at all times. And also, you know, he has a very
much
easy
to
name to
his
remember.
Chagrin.
Yeah, like I couldn't remember the names of any of the Sullys. Spider, and here we'll get into a bit of spoilers, so be warned. I think his dual loyalties, culminating with, I think, two of the better scenes in the movie, when the mom puts the knife on him, and then when he saves his dad.
Yeah.
Those two scenes add a really wonderful complexity. The second son, which I think the movie wanted to be more, the tension didn't really do much for me. Problem is that Spider doesn't really get enough time on screen to show you the journey that his character is going through. Most of his wrestling with his identity and all that really happens off screen. And we sort of spend an hour in Waterworld looking at pretty fishes. We come back to Spider and he were sort of understood that he went through that kind of emotional odyssey. We just needed a bit more of the challenge that Spider is on. Because to me, that's like what's really fascinating in the movie. Everything related to Spider.
I don't know that it was like the most interesting thing. I think that like only bit of self-recognition we get from that character is the very final act of like saving his dad and then leaving. And it's hard because it's a child character, so you can't like expect too much from. I know that a lot of people have been down on that like piece of the story, but I don't think I was there. I think I was intrigued.
But that's what I mean. Like, I'm not so down on it. I felt it was the saving grace of the movie almost. During the hour and a half of Waterworld, we break back to Spider and his dad, and there's a scene of his dad learning how to fly one of those pterodactyls, those like
that was
dinosaur
awesome. I like
bits.
That scene, that
and
was great.
The look on Spider's face, he doesn't have to say anything, just kind of both spiteful of the fact that his dad could fly it, but also then once he manages to, he's worried about his death, and then he's sort of proud of him. Like, look on his face there, to me, captures what I felt. Like, I would have loved to work with that a bit more. I felt that scene is really powerful for, again, the Spider side of it. I think the bad guy, we're not supposed to care about so much, but I felt Spider is really kind of the heart of, like, that tension. Going from close with the Sullys, hating his father, finding his father, not really his father.
A lot to it, especially the what you got at, which is just like finding his father, but not really his father. I do think arc is a little bit hamstrung because they kind of yada, 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 all of the him growing up around the Sully stuff. And you're just expected to assume he spent time with the Sullys and the Sullys are all good, that of course his loyalty is to them. But we like never really see him interacting with particularly the adults. He spends time hanging around the kids in like a scene or two very briefly.
When he's kidnapped early on in the movie, no one really cares. At no point do the Sullys go like, oh, we should go rescue our kid. Oh, what about
they
our
kid? They care
in
the sense
missing.
That like he's going to give them up, so they have to leave. Like his kidnapping
but
is
they,
the impetus
not,
for them leaving.
They don't
because
care like we lost one of our kids.
No, I know. That's
what
I'm saying.
Him.
Like, for them, it's like, oh, well, this is inconvenient. That little, you know, damn kid is going to screw up our whole life for us. Of course he's going to sell us out. You know, it's almost like selling him really short.
Jake Sully knows that the humans have science where they can just sort of read your mind. So I didn't really see it as like he's going to sell us out. I just saw it as, oh, he's going to have to tell them where we live. Let's get out of here. Like Sigourney Weaver is not really their like daughter, like biologically, but she's adopted. So like they do identify him as a member of the clan, a member of the Sullys. And then the rest of the movie, there's this like obnoxious constant being like, we're Sullys. Sullys stick together. We're Sullys. What about the human Sully, like the one who isn't 10 foot tall and blue? Like, what about him? You completely forgot about him in terms of like to save him. And then in the very end of the movie where there's that sort of emotional scene which leads to a character's death, where they go back to save him, I was like, go back to save him? You've had the entire movie to save him and you kind of like didn't care about that. So
treated him to me like he was more of a nuisance than anything else almost throughout.
Yeah.
And he never really did the same in return. And so it felt almost uneven, the like distribution of kind of love, if you will. Conveniently found a happy medium at the end.
The entire movie, John, I kept thinking, this movie needs a death. This movie needs something to ratchet up the tension to make us really care. It could be a sea person. It could be a whale person. It could be a flying dinosaur. It could be a bad guy for all I know. It could be the general's coffee burns her by accident because she's, you know, drinking too much of it. I'm thinking like Dune. I'm thinking like Ben Kenobi in Star Wars, of course. It seems like the movie is setting itself up where someone has to die, but like, when is that going to happen?
You really only had a few choices. Because obviously, like, you can't kill a new character in the first 45 minutes of a movie and, like, expect us to really care at all. So then you can kill one of the characters who carried over from the previous movie. Now you're asking more of these new characters, most of whom are children. So it sort of was in an awkward position where it didn't have a Sigourney
But I mean, Sully
still alive.
They could have killed Jake Sully or his wife. You know, either
I know.
One of those could have been
that's
a death.
I'm saying, like, they could have, but, like, then for the rest of the movie, you're asking way more of these like kid characters than you already are, which is asking a lot. Yeah. And I'm not sure that's like fair. The movie can stand up to that needed to happen when it did for yeah. you to like care at all. And even then, without getting too much into it, although I guess we've already spoiled stuff, like they obviously never developed the kid that dies because they don't want you to feel like too sad, and because they know that there's not really going to be much else to it, but it to be like an impetus for them to all kind of move forward together.
John, I want to give you what I felt was the one scene that the movie, if it would have done really well, would have been amazing for me, and it didn't. So therefore, the movie is just okay. So put yourself in the mood of the Patriot, and Mel Gibson's second son or whatever is killed, and then he just kind of goes crazy for like 5 to 10 minutes of screen time, and everyone is scared of him. Like his kids are scared of him. The surviving British soldier is terrified. Gibson is just like hacking away at a dead body in the water, and he's just covered in red blood like the way of the water. He's reduced himself to a savage. Terror in there. There's something like torturous. I mean, it really gets at maybe Mel Gibson, sort of his like deeper psyche and how he himself is a bit, you know, off. And I thought that's where this movie was going, you know, to put you back into the spoilerish end of the movie. We lose one of the kids. The mother is like the Mel Gibson parent. She's like tortured and terrified and like really upset. So is the dad. Two of them go off to sort of save their remaining kids and to get revenge. Again, very similar to The Patriot. 10 minutes was going to be this kind of Patriot-esque slash like horror film. Terrible anger of a parent who's going to like get their revenge and is going to stalk through the boat, ripping people's throats out. And the director has made like really powerful horror sci-fi type environments. And so I thought that's what we were getting. And the movie was set up to do that. And the movie tries to do that, and yet it undercuts itself with a sort of a PG heroic way of telling that 10 minutes, as opposed to what I felt it needed. It needed to be this like almost scary, like, you know, it had the setting, it had like the sinking ship and the fire and the water and the rain and like the confused marines. Like everything was there for like a really stunning revenge scene.
It's funny you say that, really, because
sold the movie.
The movie actually does have that, but it's not from the characters that you expected it from. It's from the whale. Like that's the moment is when the whale rises up, like the peaceful species of whale, and here's the one whose family is threatened, and it's like, I'm going to sink this ship. And it comes up and it just like flops down and it tears everything apart. It rips the like the hunter's arm off. It's the only blood in the orgy of PG-13 violence that, you know, is as much as you're going to get out of this movie, which obviously wants to attract like a very wide audience. I think that was like especially satisfying. You know, they don't want you to be afraid of these characters. They want you to be afraid of the humans who are trying to colonize them, and maybe somewhat of like the nature that should be left untouched.
It wasn't so lacking per se, the sort of the parents get revenge scene.
I don't think he played it safe. I think that it's betraying what he's established this race of humanoid aliens is, which is peaceful, nature loving, AWA or whatever will embrace him. That's just sort of the way it is. We protect each other. Nature has a way of sort of fixing itself, ridding itself of these problems. And, you know, I mean, obviously they're killing things and defending themselves where they have to, but it's not like, hey, I'm going on the warpath and I'm going to gouge your eyes out with my 4 or 5 fingers. I'll defend myself. I'll fight you if I have to. But that's not really what they're about. That's like, that was the whole Sully arc, is like, I'm going to run. I have to protect my family. Really, it takes the whale kind of showing him that fighting is the way to sort of get there.
That's a really good point. I like how you put that. So fire round of questions. One, the movie sets up in the beginning that the bad guys, the humans, want to take out Jake Sully because he's leading the revolution, the resistance, and they have to take out the head of the resistance in order to conquer the air people. Once he flees the air people.
And this was a humongous like plot hole, I thought.
At that point, the resistance has its head cut off, which is what they wanted. Boom, like drink more coffee and take them out. So the bad guy has a knife to one of the children and he says, drop your weapons or I'll kill your kid. So Sully's like, okay, I drop my weapons and I'll swim up on my little like swimming fish and you can take me instead. The whale shows up and, as you mentioned, gets all whaley. The bad guy still is standing there with the knife to the kid. And yet, for some reason, all of a sudden, because the whale inspired people to fight, no longer is the bad guy going to follow through and just knife the kid and then fight Sully. The bad guy even has like several times where he's, do you not believe me? You know I'm good for it. You know I'm going to kill your kid if you don't listen. And yet he isn't good for it because he doesn't kill the kid when he has the chance. So I don't know. Again, that happens in movies all the time. I'm going to do something really mean, but then they don't really do something really mean.
The alien who cried child murder.
Yeah, exactly. This I really didn't get. When the mom and the daughter in particular are sort of stuck in the boat somewhere and running out of air and all that stuff, do they forget that they spent 2 hours in the movie learning how to swim underwater? Is it supposed to be that they are so terrified they've forgotten how to swim underwater until Sigourney Weaver reminds them?
Yeah, I actually do think that that's exactly what it was, because it was sort of like you have to like lower your heart rate in order to breathe long enough to do this stuff. Too freaked out and could not physically do that.
People are really good at swimming and yet they're drowning because they can't swim. I was like, why not just swim? But yeah, so that was a bit.
I think that was it. And it was like, it took like, the sort of offbeat one, which was Sigourney Weaver's character, to kind of come in and remind them of that. And she was like the conqueror of the sea. And I think we're going to find out, that she is somehow a child of God, basically, in this.
Yeah, the Jesus character. Yeah. How much of this movie want you to see UFC or MMA do underwater matches? Because I felt the final fight between the dad and the bad guy, it was a classic like MMA. One guy had him in an elbow, the other guy did a reverse elbow, and boom, the match was over. So I wasn't sure if you think
this should be underwater. Is it making you want to watch that as much as it makes me want to listen to you commentate more UFC MMA matches?
Underwater, yeah. I just see them going there.
In any Pandora environment.
I think we're going to have a UFC fan in our bracket, so maybe this will come back around. Mm-hmm. Two last questions. How will the endless use of bro age this movie? If you're watching this in 10 years, will the constant broage throw you off, or you think it'll be okay?
I'm not sure. That's actually a funny point. I don't know, but it was a little weird. And cuz too, which already feels dated.
I don't even know if we say bro and cuz that much today, like maybe in 2019. If there was a medicine that could massively extend human life, potentially like allow us to live forever, and the cost was killing whales, would you support it? Because I would completely support it. I mean, if the cost of you and your wife and your loved ones and, maybe even your podcast co-host was that, you could live for another 100 years and it meant we had to kill one or two whales.
It would take so much for that benefit to actually trickle down to me and like anyone that I care about, that I would be against it, because all the people that are going to like reap the benefits forever are horrible and already sort of leeching off of everybody else anyway. So Edward Norton's character from Glass Onion like has
he would get the whale
stuff on his private island. Janelle Monáe's character doesn't have any, so this system's already screwed up in my opinion.
Losing out on the whales will probably hurt the guy who lives on the island in the tropics more than
the woman
who lives in Atlanta. I'm all for like these big sci-fi epics if they're done with enough love and passion, and this one was. So I had a good time with Avatar. You recommended it is 3 hours, so it's certainly not for everyone. Not only the time commitment, but I felt it is a bit slow. As you said, you have to kind of really go for that, the beautiful underwaterness of it all, which I was just average on. Ultimately, the movie isn't special because of Dune. Dune just came out last year. The movies are so similar. Dune, as we spoke about then, I felt had really had fantastic characters, and I really felt that I was part of its world. Like I felt I could almost be there. It felt very real and human in a certain way. And Avatar is just such a remove for me, but I feel like a tourist passing through. Do I need 8 more of these? Not necessarily. I'm impressed by what he's done so far. So that's my Avatar thoughts.
Yeah, I really liked it, mostly from the visual side and the world building side of things versus anything plot related. Give me a Planet Pandora documentary series instead of 3 more Avatar movies. Hopefully we don't have to wait 13 more years.
We're not going to wait 13 more seconds even. Share with the listeners the bracket. Quick hits. EO, a movie about a donkey. Women Talking. It's no One Night in Miami as far as stage plays go. 13 Lives. Ron Howard, Colin Farrell, Viggo Mortensen, Joel Edgerton. 2018, 13 Thai boys trapped in an underwater cave. It's good. It's not really great. And then two movies I was less excited about. One of them is called To Leslie. Really kind of subdued movie that has a great Andrea Riseborough in the lead. She's pretty good. And Bubbles from the Wire is there. And then The Woman King, I think we'll be talking about a bit more. Those are the movies I caught up with. To kind of give people a bit of context, John and I think we have 8 spots left, and we have kind of 14 movies fighting to get to those 8 spots. Of these 14 movies, it's basically John likes some of them a bit more, I like some of them a bit more, some of them neither of us have seen.
Before we get into like all the Bubble movies, like can we just run down the titles that like we all agreed on and are definitely in the bracket.
Going from sort of the top, just by, again, critical ranking, so I guess this will be the seating more or less in the bracket. Banshees of Inisherin, Marcel the Shell with Shoes On, Everything Everywhere All at Once, RRR, and Tar. Those are five that are in.
Okay, then we have Decision to Leave, which I mentioned I haven't seen yet, but I'm excited to. Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, Glass Onion, Knives Out Mystery, and The Fablemans.
Top Gun Maverick, Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, movie we spoke about last episode, Nope, Kimmy, The Woman King, and Batman.
The Batman.
Sorry, The Batman.
No, yeah, Michael Keaton here.
I'll do one more just to tie it off at the number 20 here. We have The Menu.
Then we have Cha-Cha Real Smooth, Funny Pages, Avatar, The Way of Water, which we just discussed, Dana, or Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, and a couple more, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, Armageddon.
The Nick Cage
time.
Movie.
Yeah, right. I think it's good to specify it. Bodies, Bodies, Bodies.
The 14 on the bubble are All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, The Northmen, All Quiet on the Western Front, the Netflix movie, EO, that donkey movie, Women Talking, On the Count of Three, 13 Lives, Paris 13th District, Weird, the Al Yankovic movie, Triangle of Sadness, Babylon, The Whale, Elvis, and 3,000 Years of Longing.
I didn't know what Weird was, bubble. And I was kind of like, yeah, going to go ahead and say, like, hey, why don't we take off Weird, because I've never heard of it. I know the Al Yankovic movie. I forgot it was called Weird.
It's better to call it the Al Yankovic movie, you're right. That's kind of the way to remember it. Meaning, assuming it's not impossible to see, let's put All the Beauty and the Bloodshed in, right?
Yeah, and maybe let's have a backup just in case we can't see it, but I agree that we should have something documentary related. I don't remember if we have any on the already in
list. We don't.
I think we actually do.
We don't.
Yeah, it's been a weird documentary year, but I think that should be in, and then we can have like a kind of a backup if it becomes unachievable for us to see it. We can discuss as like another documentary potentially.
Yeah, exactly. We have a doc in, we're skipping Northmen for the reasons John described.
For all you fans of Robert Eggers.
You know, I like, but go back to our March episode where I think I put in my top five of the year so far. All Quiet on the Western Front. This is a movie out on Netflix. I spoke about it last episode, so I won't do any more now. I just don't think it's that interesting. And it is kind of like the fourth telling or so of this movie. Go back and watch the 1930s, you know, Oscar winning classic. To me, it has no chance of winning the bracket. And it's not so compelling that I think it's so worthwhile of giving it another 2 minutes in a month's time. So I'm kind of happy leaving it in the mud of France and not putting it
in. That's fine. Ironically enough, even though I haven't seen it and I'm not like so enthusiastic to watch it, but it just seemed to me it's like something that I feel like is, you know, going to maybe pick up some Oscar nominations, is like more accessible than some of the other movies we're discussing, that maybe it was worth including, but going to push you on that since you're
also
the one who's actually watched it.
And it's a German language movie. I'm always very respectful of the fact that I understand certain people don't like foreign language movies, so I'm obviously going to push for a Parasite or anything, but like I'm happy to kind of be a little... EO is in theory a foreign language movie, but there's no talking in the movie. So maybe of the 32 we would include, it might be the most arty. You know, it's just a donkey wandering through the countryside, seeing how screwed up people are.
It's a good movie. Sort of, I think EO belongs in.
Women Talking, I was kind of average on, but I do think it feels like an important movie.
I think it should probably be in, even though I'm not, another movie that's probably not going to win around, but it feels a little bit weird not including that in a summary of the 2022 movies.
On the Count of Three, it's one of the movies I've really been pumping all year. A movie that our core group of like 32 movies fans, people, I just feel really like. It's like a fun movie to watch. It's thoughtful. The acting is really great. I'm forgetting the name of the director / lead actor in it, but he hosted the Golden Globes recently. It's certainly no like Avatar, but it's just a movie I think people will really like, and I'd love to kind of give it some shine in the bracket.
I don't really know that much about it, besides that you were a fan of it. Comedies and movies that like enjoyable in this way maybe don't get the recognition they deserve, so it's probably going to be a nice like antidote to some, you know, more heavier dramas and stuff, even though I guess this does have some dramatic elements to it. But
on the Count of Three, we can say in 13 Lives, I already made the case. I think we can skip it. Paris 13th District. This is probably most of the margins. And I feel
you really like this movie, right?
It's clearly a French movie. Like, it's about people having relationships in the 2020 in a district of Paris. I would kind of compare it to On the Count of Three, except, you know, not as much of a comedy, so to speak. You won't have a bad time watching it. And if you can get over kind of the foreign languageness of it all, you'll be like, okay, that would be a movie I really like, definitely top 10 if it was an American English language, you know, set in New York or whatever it is. So I just feel there's like enough there, but I'll agree with you. To me, it's certainly maybe if we put it in the bracket, it's kind of the most marginal in terms of, it's not an Oscar Beatty movie.
It's an acclaimed director. It's Jacques Audiard, who did A bunch of like acclaimed French movies. I think he won a Palme d'Or for Dipan. Did you ever see Dipan?
No, I had no
A
background
good
with the
movie.
director. I had no background with anything. I just kind of.
I think he did a Prophet too, which is a really good movie. Is there a legal way for people to watch this movie?
That's fair.
And if
Yeah,
there
that is
is, then
fair.
I'm supportive of it. Yeah, you can watch this
Yeah.
movie if you have a Hulu subscription, which I think enough people do.
It's VOD for $4 on Google and Amazon on, Weird Al Yankovic, Daniel Radcliffe. It's so silly. Just have a bit of comedy, a bit of fun in the bracket.
Yeah, you
Wilson
can
is
throw this
great.
in.
What do you think of my idea sort of saying, like, we'll smush Babylon versus Elvis as kind of bottom play-in?
I'm okay with it. I don't know that I'm gonna see Babylon in time.
If it's a play-in, marginal, and each of us gets like one or two movies to say we don't want to watch in the bracket because it's just not our cup of tea, slash we won't get to it. Babylon to me, maybe because it came out at the very end of the year and it has a prominent director and like an all-star cast, it felt like we both catch up with it and we're both completely down with it. Or if both of us don't catch up with it, then that would be a reason to leave it out. But either way, if it's a play-in, it can easily hop off. And then Elvis, I think, is
Yeah, I think
what you
that's
said.
totally fair, especially against a movie like Elvis, which like sort of needs to be in this, I think. I know I
Yeah.
stumped for that when we were texting about this.
Triangle Sadness, let's just give it a bit of love versus The Menu, without saying who we vote for. I think both of us made our interest in The Menu
Well,
plain.
I see you have The Whale highlighted as like a maybe a skip, and I think I agree with neither of us has seen it yet. We don't know if it's actually going to be any good. It's been really divisive. I'm not super keen to see it, so let's leave that off.
Just
3,000
one
Years of
spot.
Longing, I really liked.
So I would put it in.
I'm
I
proposing,
don't.
I think we can just cut it and we can just give Triangle of Sadness like a normal spot because I don't want to put The Menu in a playing game, especially
Oh
against
no,
like
so
the Palme d'Or winner. Like,
although we do frame the bracket as purely based on critic ranking, the seeding, we also very much look for thematic matchups. And so like to me, Triangle Sadness has no chance of winning or going very far. I like 3,000 Years of Longing much more. I kind of despise Triangle Sadness.
oh, okay. I
And
thought you didn't
so
like it.
to Triangle Sadness, I dislike, and 3,000 Years of Longing didn't work for me, but like there's enough there. And I actually think it's kind of a movie we'll be talking about maybe in 5 to 10 years' time because it plays around with different themes. And my point is that, like, to me, Triangle of Sadness, it is fun to speak about in the context of The Menu because they're so similar. I actually think it's fun to have it go against The Menu, and I wouldn't worry so much about The Menu's chances. Guest who joins us may completely upset the planned dish that we were going to dine on.
That's what I'm worried
But
about. If the menu
yeah.
doesn't even make it to the 32, I am going to go Ralph Fiennes on everybody on the call.
Fair enough. Okay, we've been warned. With a bit of movie magic, you know how like in the cooking shows they just whip out the dish right away. This is
Voila.
yeah.
A bracket
This is
has been created. But I always love that, we have movies that maybe we aren't so keen on that end up going far because of the way the bracket breaks down. And I'm looking at the top and I have, without spoiling too much, in one of these brackets, two of my five favorite movies of the year up against each other in round one. So
Oh,
it'll be
wow.
interesting to see how everything kind of plays
Yeah.
out.
In theory, I want the two best movies maybe to be at the two finalists, but it is kind of sometimes fun when you have those like really tense decisions to make
Yeah,
fairly early on, and then
one of the four quadrants has seven of my top 10.
I'm excited. I think there's some really nice also thematic matchups this year. Be back to touch on our favorites, our 32 plus favorites a bunch of weeks from now, sometime in February.
Looking forward to
it. Na umasa nokur me fawe atantina molunge mi patireiti mi paitanti launo ametela launo lametela.